Hey all you Josh Junkies out there. Welcome to another episode of Just Joshin' with Josh Gentry, world's most fascinating author podcast. Today I'm going to talk a little bit about the writing of Bad Penny. If you don't have a copy of Bad Penny, the ebook is available at all major ebook retailers. Paperback will be a couple months probably. And I've started researching the audio options. Some excitement for down the road. But about the writing of Bad Penny. So I started it at least 10 years ago, maybe more. Obviously, I didn't work on it constantly that time. I'd pick it up, put it down sometime for years, pick it up, put it down, etc. It's probably because I didn't know how to write a long form. I'd written short stuff before, but I'd never written a book, a novel. But let's see, it's been long enough, I don't remember where Penny came from, that character and that first scene, right? I do not remember where that idea for the person who, like, needs to get bitten, but because that's so dangerous, you know, then tries to kill the vampire at the same time. Where that came from, where she came from, it's been long enough, I don't remember. I had that first scene a long time ago, though. I was like, okay, that's cool, I got that. You know, where does it go from there? If you haven't read it yet, it's still pretty new out there, so I'm going to try not to do all the spoilers. But from the first scene, it's kind of clear there must be someone supporting her. There's like some logistical support, right? So, pretty soon after that, we meet the good doctor. That's where the good doctor came from. It's like, how is Penny set up to do this? Okay, so then we got the good doctor. And then I got her there, and I was like, okay, she's leaving the good doctor's office. Where does she go? What does she do? So then that's where the night fowl came from, and Penny's irregulars, and meet that cast of characters. So I'm like, okay, who's hanging out at this bar she's a waitress at? It's like, okay, cool. I like this. And shortly past that, I got really stuck. And this is where I come back to, I never had a plot that was a story arc that was, you know, book length before. And I really struggled. And again, I would pick it up, put it down. I had a few false starts. I can't remember all the details. Plus, all the details would be boring. But eventually, I finally came to a realization that took me, like, stupidly long to come to, especially since I'm an English major. So I'm an avid reader. I've read all these books, and then when you're an English major, you're specifically analyzing books. You would think this would have been obvious to me, but what I finally realized was that there had to be a world bigger than Penny. She couldn't just be in this bubble. Maybe if it was a short story, she could be. Because world building is not really my thing. So maybe that's why I didn't go there naturally. But more specifically, there needed to be the world, because there needed to be this container, this context for a bigger conflict than Penny's conflict going on. That would somehow intersect with Penny's conflict, cause Penny's conflict. It's kind of like if you're doing a war story and you're following some, you know, band of brothers or group of, you know, Red Cross nurses or whatever, you're focusing in, you zoom in on them, but it's because there's this bigger conflict going on, you know, World War II or whatever. And then you zoom in on a piece of that, which is them. And they have their own, it's almost, fractal. Like there's the conflict within the conflict within the conflict. So there's the bigger conflict that's got to be going on that she fits into and that intersects with or causes her conflict. Finally came to that conclusion. And then, so that's where then the Vampire Mare came from and the Covenant. And it took me a long time to then work out because, like I said, world building, not really my thing. I've never done this long form thing before. It took me a long time to work out that kind of bigger thing that was going on. And then, to be fair, I still kind of referenced that stuff as little as possible that I thought I could get away with because it's not really my thing. That was a huge breakthrough for me that I think is like a lesson learned about writing longer pieces, I think. I'm sure it doesn't apply to everything. Nothing applies to everything. But I believe that will be helpful to me in the future. So yeah, that was one of the like writing craft things that I learned while writing Bad Penny. That's the kind of thing I'm going to try and do in this podcast, I think. Also, there'll be publishing stuff. Right now, what I'm going to do at the end here, it's kind of like the recommendation section. So if you're not aware of bookshop.org and libro.fm, I want to introduce you to them. Bookshop.org is a website. It's a very well done, very slick a web store for print books. So it's like an alternative to Amazon. In my opinion, it's nicer than shopping on Amazon because it's way less cluttered. They're not trying to sell you a bunch of stuff that isn't books. And so it's a nice store. They have a big selection. They don't have everything that Amazon does, but they have a big selection. And the really cool thing about it is it's not a nonprofit exactly. I forget what the designation is, but it's like a socially conscious corporation. So what you can do is you can designate a local bookstore. When you create your account, you designate a bookstore. So here in Albuquerque, for example, it might be Page One or Books on the Bosque or... oh gosh, that one down on Rio Grande by the Flying Star. I'm spacing at the moment. And when you buy a book, Bookshop, though, if I think most of the stores have signed up now. It became really big during COVID, and I think most of the independent bookstores are aware of it. I mean, you're not going to find a Barnes & Noble's in there, but most independent bookstores know about it. And so... mine is set to Books on the Bosque because it's the one really close to my house. So when I buy a book, $2, $3, $4 goes to Books on the Bosque. So it's a way to shop online for books, but have revenue go to your local physical bookstore to support it for those times when you actually do have time and you want to go browse a physical store. That's really cool. And they have good service, and I've had nothing but good experiences with them. Also, maybe even more exciting than is Libro.fm. It's Libro.fm, I think. And it does the same thing for audiobooks. So it's an Audible alternative. Again, not the full selection that Audible has, but a really big selection. They have an app, of course, because you're playing the audio. You need an app to play it in. Very slick, very professional. And it's the same deal. So again, when I buy an audiobook there, some of the revenue goes to Books on the Bosque. And they have the same pricing model. So I don't know if it's exactly the same price, but you can either buy individual books or for a somewhat lower price, you can do the monthly subscription for one credit. And they have the whole credit system. It's very familiar if you've done Audible. Those are... I mean, it's an important thing to support independent bookstores. Also, as much really good things as Amazon has done, and they have done great things for, they really launched self-publishing, to be honest, but they're also a behemoth corporation, and we don't want them to have a monopoly. Same with Audible, of course, owned by Amazon for audiobooks. You never want a monopoly, so this is a really good thing to do. To take a little bit away from the monopoly and spread it around your independent bookstores in your city or your neighborhood. All right, we're about to hit 10 minutes. It's like a record for Just Joshin' with Josh Gentry. So I will say goodbye for now. This has been another episode of Just Joshin' with Josh Gentry, the podcast where I think, therefore I'm wrong, after which I podcast. Today's a miracle.